SBS Radio. Today we're talking about a topic that you mentioned yourself is a bit of a taboo. Yesterday I read a headline that we're going to have to start introducing something called plant factories as the population heads to 10 billion people. What are your thoughts on population and how do you see population impacting on sustainability?
Well, I think we have to talk about it because for the last 30 years we've sort of pretended that population doesn't really have any impact on environment, you know, a major impact on the environment. There have been various estimates of what a sustainable population might be for the world. None of them got above 5 billion, and we're at 7.67 billion at the moment. I just checked the population clock earlier just to see exactly where we are. So, we do need to talk about it's not just a matter of looking at our ecological footprint. It's also a case of too many feet. We have to think about both of them. But, of course, it's been a taboo because it's a difficult, it's a very polarised topic, gets a lot of passion and people talk about it. So actually getting a rational discussion around population has been very hard. I've been, you know, working on this since about the 1980s, talking about it, and I think it's better today than it has been. But it's still a problem. It's interesting, the recent IPBES report on extinction notes that population growth as well as consumption is a key driver of extinction.
You said in the article that it can be split up into three topics that sort of define, you know, your role as an academic is either easy or slightly more challenging. You spoke about overpopulation, overconsumption and endless growth economy. What exactly is, you know, briefly defined are these three topics and why are they so divisive in society?
Why are they? Well, essentially two of them at least are very strong taboos. We do talk about overconsumption being a problem a fair bit in our society, and yet we're still stuck with shop till you drop as an ideology because, you know, with society spends $600 million a year on advertising, and it has an impact. So while we talk about reducing consumption, we're really not very good at actually doing that. There's a whole lot of things involved that have made it a taboo. Part of it is religion. Various religions don't like talking about controlling population. Part of it has been a misconception that somehow you're talking about massive euthanasia or forced sterilization, in other words, coercive methods, when in fact everyone that's talking about trying to reduce populations talking about non-coercive methods of population control. In terms of the endless growth population, I would argue actually that that is probably the greatest taboo of all because we are in a growth economy in neoclassical economics that doesn't accept that there are any ecological limits. Again, that is being questioned, I'm glad to say, by a lot more people now in terms of ecological economics, the steady state economy, degrowth, etc. I mean, you can ask a primary school kid, you can say, on a finite planet, do you think we can keep growing physically forever? And they'll tell you, oh, duh, you're stupid or something. I mean, they get it. It's not possible. And yet, remarkably, as a society, that's what we're trying to do. Humanity has a key failing. At least half of us will deny a reality we don't like or to believe in. We're very good at avoiding discussing topics that are difficult.
You spoke about an interesting equation as well, that environmental impact is sort of population times affluence and times technology. Would you be able to explain this in a little bit more detail?
Yeah, well, sure. That's really the key equation or entity of environmental science, that if you're going to look at environmental impact, you really, I mean, roughly multiply the population times the affluence or per capita consumption times the technology you're going to use. So in other words, if you move to renewables really fast, you can reduce your impact a lot in the technology side. Or if you really reduce consumption, you can reduce your impact overall. But, of course, reducing the number of people, of course, is also one way to do that. I don't know any environmental scientist who seriously questions the reality of those things. How they multiply together in terms of which is most important. I mean, it's been called an entity rather than an equation because it's not an absolute thing. But in other words, you've got to think of all those three things.
I've had a few recent conversations on the program with various scientists on talking about population, maybe not necessarily overpopulation, but discussing how densely populated our cities are. What is an ecologically sustainable population? And particularly what interests me is that part of what you were saying and what everyone has sort of brought up. There is a difference between affluence and who has a bigger population and who is using more resources. So population growth is faster in countries where the consumption is much lower. So how do you reach a point where affluent countries or countries like Australia, using us as an example, aren't overusing resources, whereas countries where maybe population is growing, they don't have the resources to use anyway. So maybe they're still making a lesser impact than we are.
Yeah, there is a particular area in the social science part of academia that likes to say the problem is just the population of Western nations. It's not the problem with the developing world. That might have been true 20 years ago. It's not true now because the developing world is rapidly catching up. China is now the biggest carbon polluter in the world beyond the United States. India is the third. We need to really be controlling this everywhere. I mean, basically, if you allow women to determine their own fertility, the fertility rate tends to drop wherever this has been done. And that means you need education. It also means you need a society that allows that to happen. So, yes, it's true. We do need to reduce the amount of energy and materials used by the developed world. This increase to 9.8 billion by 2050 is likely to mean that we clear another 2 billion or the 14 billion hectares of terrestrial land in the world and cause an even huger, greater extinction rate. So assuming we don't want to bankrupt nature and see half the species go extinct, that really does mean we have to act quickly. Now, the solutions to population have been the non-coercive, humane solutions. The key ones are, you know, family planning, access to contraceptives, education, particularly for girls and young women. They're the two key things, giving women the chance to actually determine their own fertility. These things have been done in places, and you can actually halve the birth rate within a few years if you allow that to happen. The problem is we're still not allowing that to happen in much of the world. So it's very popular to say the problem is all in the West or the North, and that is a big part of the problem. Historically, it's been a major part of the problem, but of course the rest of the world is trying to catch up, and you know, that's why we have an ecological footprint of 1.75 planets at the moment, and of course we only have one planet.
Going back to what you were saying about looking for a solution that obviously isn't, you know, we're not looking to end human life on Earth, does you promoting a lesser population make you sort of a bit of a bad guy in other people's eyes? How do you approach arguments that are saying that controlling population size is sort of impeding on people's right to have a family and going against, you know, almost a human instinct to have children? And is that a valid argument to have in this context, or do you think that we just need to put that aside at the moment?
As I've asked my students, okay, sure, everyone agrees on human rights. Okay, what about rights of future humans, future generations? Do they have rights? And people go, oh, yeah, they do too. And I say, well, what about the rights of nature? Does nature have rights? Most people say, yeah, of course nature has rights. So rights aren't absolute and you have to consider all of them. So is it the right for a woman to have a child? Yes. Yeah, sure. Maybe one or two. But the question is it five or six? Is that somebody's right to have five or six children for a couple? The answer is no, because the world can't support that anymore. I mean, it's very easy to call people who talk about population control anti-human. In fact, I've never met a population activist, and I've met a lot of them, who was anti-human. In fact, they're a very pro-human because they were very worried about what's going to happen to humanity in the future. We don't want to see billions of people dying of starvation or disease caused by overpopulation. Just at the same, we don't want to see a mass extinction of non-human life on Earth. So in other words, our ethics and our idea of rights should be extended to the non-human as well as the human, where everybody works in balance. This is so we have eco-justice and social justice should be entwined in harmony. At the moment, we're not. We're out of control, and I've never met anyone that's actually anti-human. They're just, many of them being scientists are aware of what's coming, and that's why they're talking about non-coercive, humane ways of controlling population if we get over the taboo. In other words, if we break the denial dam and actually realise we've got a problem and then use our intelligence, creativity and imagination towards the solutions.
I'd like to sort of end it could be hopeful or it could not, depends on your answer, but you've devoted your whole life to ecological issues. Like you said, you've started campaigning for this in, if I heard correctly, the 80s. So it's been many years. Does this mean that you have hope that it will make a difference, it will get better, we will break that denial and start looking for a solution? Or do you think that sort of everything is too far gone at this point?
It's never too late. I mean, I know it has been said it's too late, and that annoys me because that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you believe things are too late, then you don't take action to make them better. My view is it's never too late. It's called moral integrity. You do the right thing, even if you don't completely succeed. So, yeah, we are going to lose a lot more species in the next few decades on Earth, but we could improve that dramatically. There are going to be a lot of problems there in terms of food production, feeding people, and keeping the nature that we've got. But, of course, we can either move to a transition, or we can stop doing anything and go into a catastrophe. I'd much rather work towards a transition. So yes, I do have some hope, but most environmental scientists get a bit depressed at times in terms of the scale of the problem. The point is, you can always make it better than it would be otherwise if you didn't act. I'm not optimistic, I'm not pessimistic, I'm realistic. In other words, we have a real grim predicament. We have major problems. Can we solve it? Yes, we can. But we've got to stop denying we've got a problem.
Hear more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.